Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. This is Shake Them Ropes. It's all a shared experience. And Chris, you taste that? People getting salty about professional wrestling.
No, yeah, well, no way. Big feels, bad faith, and big salt.
That, you know what? That's all wrestling is, especially wrestling Twitter. Bad faith and big feels and lots of snark. Chris has a cough. He's recovering from the rocking pneumonia and the boogie woogie flu. Quote Johnny Winters.
Yeah, Johnny Rivers. I mentioned last week that I was going to be working on top of the mountain, and that was a lot of fun. I had a good time actually during the shift, but I definitely like over pushed myself and I could feel it. And then I came down with pneumonia in the weekend ensuing.
And I'm on the on-ramp onto something, so I'm occasionally coughing too. So we apologize in advance. Looks like Chris has a healthy stash going again. Are we going with the handlebar again?
Yeah, the handlebar, whatever the hell you want to call the bottom thing.
I forgot what I call that. That's not a soul patch. It's a.
I think it might be a soul patch.
Is it a Van Dyke? Is that what this whole thing is?
I don't know.
The stash with the little thing under. I think it's a Van Dyke, but you know what? I'm not into it's 20s fashion or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think basically it's like a 20s style facial thing.
Yeah, it is.
I don't really think.
Look, you're in your vendetta phase, so.
Sure, man. Like, you know, if you want that, then we can have that too.
Revolution. It's all Chris. Just doesn't need the mask. It's great. Oh, where to start? Where to begin? Well, we should just begin at the beginning with the news. Lee Fitting, formerly from ESPN, is WWE's new head of media and production, replacing Kevin Dunn. Interesting hire. For a couple of reasons. Number one, the leaks have already started coming out from WWE people that they're nervous because he's an outsider, and some are worried he might bring in his own people. You know who's leaking that? The people
Kevin
he's going to be their
people.
Boss.
Yes. Yeah, Kevin Dunn's people. I mean, it's the people who were the beneficiaries of the Dunn regime, and they were definitely... I mean, the thing with Dunn is he made winners and losers.
Yes.
And there were people who definitely won big by being his ass kiss, and they might not be at a position in their career where they can demonstrate their loyalty and, you know, get the favorable seating and everything like that.
Fitting is a Mark Shapiro guy. Mark Shapiro coming over from ESPN to work for TKO, but only Fitting did not have a gracious exit from ESPN. 5 days before ESPN produced its first college football game of the year, it parted way with the executive overseeing all college football at the network, and that was Lee Fitting, 25-year company veteran employee who oversaw college and pro football production at the network. Well, why do you read this, Jeff? This was back in August. Well, today, The Athletic, a property of the New York Times, came out with a big old investigative report on how ESPN was now in a scandal for putting and had to return about 30 Emmys because they put fake names on the Emmy nominations. And then they had those fake names scratched off of the Alpha the award and re-engraved and gave them to talent at the network. And you know who one of the people, the main people behind that scandal was, Chris? I'll give you a guess.
Our boy Lee Fitting.
Our boy Lee Fitting. So
I like this. So, like, you're telling me for years ESPN was nominating people like Bartleby Pendergrast.
Yes.
Yes, they had Timothy McMurphy and just changing the names.
Well, you know, it would be one of these things where it's like, okay, College Game Day, and here's the staff of them. And so they just kind of add a few more staff members that don't exist. And then they give
Salvador Kanuki, you know, all these sorts of people.
And then, hey, Reese Davis, come on over here. Here's an Emmy for you. Hey, Stuart Scott, come over here. Here's an Emmy for
award-winning Stuart Scott.
Yes, you know, those not that they didn't win Emmys on their own or whatever, but, you know, for lower tier ESPN broadcast talent or whatever, so that they can take part in being Emmy winning. Yes. And I laugh because you remember there was a push a couple years ago where WWE was doing presentations wanting to win an Emmy. I think we've found a way now. For Emmy, I cannot wait, Chris. I cannot wait for Emmy award winning WWE Raw. Maybe they put it in with another production from TKO, like UFC something or other. They put a few fake names and then they get a fake Emmy back.
They should win an Emmy for doing an entire episode as one continuous shot, and it's just the ring camera for the entire show. And so, like, all the entrances and everything don't happen. We just see them as they walk to the ring, but it's 3 hours of a continuous shot, an absolute television cinematic accomplishment.
Over in AEW, they have now hired a chief operating officer. Kosha Irby has been hired for the role. Served as regional director of live events for WWE from 2011 to 2018. Had been working as a chief marketing officer for Clemson University Athletics Department since February 2023. After leaving WWE, worked as president of the Memphis Express AAF football team from June 2018 to April 2019. And he was also the chief marketing officer for Professional Bull Riders LLC from 2019 to 2023. Now, of course, Twitter being what it was and what it is, we had to go looking at Kosha Irby's tweets, and of course, everybody started losing their mind because, Kosha Irby once called Vince McMahon a genius. Of course he did. There are people who loved working for WWE who called Vince a genius. I wish AEW fans would, because they were panicking, he might be a mole.
I mean, I think Vince McMahon has enemies who would call him on some level
a genius.
Yeah, right. It's not like I agree with everything he ever did or anything like that, but there's certain moves that he made that were really, you know, very clever, like very savvy. And other moves that were scurrilous and not admirable in the slightest, but like,
they were still smart, some of them.
Yeah, right, right. And like, these are not, you don't have to love someone to think they're a genius.
No, definitely not. Mickey James. Let me get my notes back up here. Yeah, Mickey James hired as creative director and head of female talent for Ohio Valley Wrestling. I'm fascinated by this for many reasons. I'm kind of, I guess TNA or / Impact, there wasn't room there. And I guess maybe AEW, there wasn't room there. And WWE has, you know, they don't have anybody separate for female talent. They're all kind of together. But Molly Holly is kind of one of the producers who really works closely with there. I would think Mickey James would be far more in demand. Not that OVW's, you know, piddly or anything. They do have, you know, a reality show. They have other things there that they can do. But, Mickey James getting hired by a wrestling company and her being on the market and other people not knowing about that. I think that's the most shocking thing to me about it.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that we haven't had more chatter about Mickey James. Cause especially for, frankly, and any number of women's divisions right now, her is just coming in there as the head pen and kind of the guidance would probably help them steady the course and get to a more consistent sort of program. in that division.
I still think if she wanted to wrestle, she could. AEW should take a flyer and put her on a, you know, temporary basis. She doesn't have to be the ace of the division, but, you know.
No, but she'd be a welcome addition to the middle of the card.
Yeah,
for
definitely.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Wednesday night's homecoming episode of AEW Dynamite averaged 797,000 viewers on TBS, down 0.5% from last week. Second lowest audience.
But how did it do in the demo?
It's the second lowest audience total for the show since October 25th, but it drew a 0.29 rating in the 18 to 49 demo. That's
there
up
we go. So yeah, all right.
And ties the third highest rating the show has done since the October 18th.
So, ladies and gentlemen, AEW is back.
Ah, gosh.
You know, a lot of people
that's
would
a glass
rather...
half full, glass half empty rating, though. You got to admit.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, there's a lot of people who would like to get 1.5 million in just raw viewers, but they don't really think about the qualitative nature of those viewers. Are they good people? Good viewers? Do they have substance? And that's what the demo is all about. So it does not matter to me that AEW has a hard time breaking a million on a regular basis, Jeffrey, because the people who watch the show are good people. And that's what the demo is all about.
Other various notes on ratings, et cetera. NXT, 722,000 was slightly lower in their demo.
Exactly.
Raw, of course, got hammered by the national title game. And of an interesting note, Rampage outdrew Collision this week. Which, I don't know, I liked the Collision. I did. I thought it was pretty good, but, yeah.
AEW's in a really interesting place right now. They have three B shows and no A show.
Wow. I don't know. I mean, they still treat Dynamite like the A show.
Okay, sure, that's good. I mean, and like, you know, it's like watching a baseball team where you have to have a best hitter on the team. And so, like, somebody's got to be it, right?
I don't know. You had a pretty good FTR House of Black tag team match on Collision. You have some good stars on there. It's just one of those things where it just doesn't feel like appointment television week after week.
Well, you never leave Dynamite wanting more. It continues to be the problem. Like, we're going to get
about
into
Collision. I mean,
no, but suppose if you will,
okay,
Jeffrey,
okay,
Dynamite,
now I get your point.
Yeah, supposing Dynamite was an A show, you would leave Dynamite wanting more, and then you would watch a Rampage or a Collision, and as we'll break down in the reviews here. This was not a Dynamite that left me wanting more. This is a Dynamite where it was like, are we done? And then I heard Ric Flair come out and I didn't need to watch anymore. So I was actually thrilled because I was like, cool. And I just turned that crap off and moved on with my week.
Oh, that Ric Flair thing.
I didn't even, please. You'll have to fill me in.
You didn't see the snake match at all?
No, I stopped watching the second Flair came out. I'm done with him. I'm over Flair.
Okay. It's a decent match, but we'll talk about it in a moment. So you say, okay, cool. And this will bring us into the Lazy River of Wrestling Criticism, where we watched some classic content. Don't know if we'll note on it because both of us were talking about pre-show what we were watching, but we'll see. Whatever was on this week, we'll talk about. We hopefully got to it all, or at least most of it, and, you know, we'll delve here and there. I told Chris I watched Raw live for the first time in ages because I watched Monday Night Football every week, and I had to do the Fightful show afterwards, and you know, it was a fun time, but it still felt long to me. But starting with this, and I alluded to it at the top of the show, old Tony Khan got into his feels on Twitter again. Raj Geary of Wrestling Inc. I like Raj personally, but he also picked up a bar tab of mine once, so that then claims me don't like you. Noted that the Jinder Mahal Seth Rollins thing is a callback to, you know, the first match for the NXT title at the time. And so the WWE on USA account, or it was either that or the official USA Network account, I can't remember which one, you know, asked what the cage match rating was for it. And this set off Tony Khan, who kind of likes cage matching, and likes referring to the cage match ratings, and, you know, has an affinity for the site. And he just goes off and goes, hey, a moral victory for USA is one win more than their world title challenger Jinder Mahal has in the past 364 days. Because it's literally a full year since he won a match. You really put AEW in our place getting Jinder Mahal in a big match on your TV show. Do it more often. Of course, your boy Jeff, me, has to quote tweet old Tony here and remind him that before the four-way on in October, Abaddon hadn't even won a broadcast television match in 3 years, and now she's in the world title hunt. I'm not going to be as tough on Tony as Chris here, I think, because I've been far too tough on him of late. I'm just going to say this. There's a little main character syndrome going on with Tony. And there's also, he was raised on Mr. McMahon being the face of his promotion. And also in the tech world, those inventors and those CEOs being the faces of their corporations. You know, Steve Jobs with Apple, Bill Gates with Microsoft, Zuckerberg with Facebook.
Musk with Tesla
and X and SpaceX and all.
No,
that.
I actually think, especially for a guy like Khan, probably, you know, he grew up, you know, he came of age, so to say, as an adult during the big Elon Musk is actually Tony Stark media BS push of 2010 through 2013. And so I think a lot of Khan's sort of stylization as the visionary and stuff is very Musk-like, shall we say, and not unlike his inspiration, a bit of that thin skin need to post online all the time crap. It's like posting rather than doing, which is also a trap that I kind of would feel like, you know, his source of inspiration has fallen into. It's like, so they do nothing. It's that, like, when they're posting like this, you're like, shouldn't you be doing something more important?
Why are you looking at your phone right now?
Why are you doing this?
Are you clock watching and just waiting? And, oh, I just decided to come on Twitter and see what's going on.
Sitting in his CEO office, looking at his phone going, can't wait to get the F out of here. I hate this place.
Is it 5:30 like, yet? Can I go?
Yeah, I hate it here.
Tony, you're the boss. You can leave.
Go. You work here. Yeah. Like, why are you posting?
Especially to a response from a tweet from another wrestling guy. It's like, what are you doing? Are you just, I'm scrolling my feed and I follow Raj and I also follow WWE on USA for some reason. And it just happened to pop into my feed.
clearly he must be really sad.
He was keyword searching cage match on Twitter and it came up or something. I don't know.
Khan cage match, yeah, right. Yeah,
well, Khan wasn't even involved in it. This was talking about Jinder and Seth Rollins. And Khan's name was never in it.
He should buy cage match.
Or grapple. Yeah, sure.
Well, no, he should just buy it so that, like, he loves the web. I mean, he loves it so much. Why don't you just buy it? That's what Musk did.
And he could do great inflation for his match.
Yeah, did they?
Oh, because that would come off as
roll out a bunch of hot new changes to make cage match way better than it's been before.
Just imagine him, maybe
change it to like match.com or cage.com.
Tony has a bad night one night. He goes and somebody has like ranked like a Trent Beretta versus Action Andretti match, like a 5 out of 10. Damn you. I'm buying the company. That's at least an 8.4. And he buys cage match.
Wildly overpays for cage match.
And he starts doing the, what's the name of Mitch Romney's burner? P Pierre Delecto or whatever. He starts creating burner accounts for reviewing mess matches and stuff. So he can bring the average of AEW matches up. Mexico, like Michael Vick used to use as his hotel name.
Yeah, like I mean this. The issue is that he keeps putting himself in situations. This is not.
I do it to protect the boys.
No, you do. The boys don't need your. You know what that is? You like when he does that crap. It is Tony Khan doing that cleaner. I got this meme from several years ago, only as the CEO.
Yeah.
Like cleaner, I got this. Like the boys are fine. They can handle their own social medias. All of you need to get off of it. Like, I mean, go AEW dark on social media for 2 months, please.
Your turn, sir.
Let's talk about Raw. Pretty good show, honestly. From top to bottom, when the next segment would come up and I would have doubts about it, it over-delivered. Like just as a quick one here. Caden Carter and Katana Chance versus Piper Niven and Chelsea Green was an extremely well-worked match. That was an entertaining match with, like, good, like, in-match storytelling and stuff, quality mistake. Chelsea Green gets a visual three, but the ref's out of position. There's a miscommunication between the heel team where one of the – I mean, like, a lot of, like, novel little beats inside of that match that made that match worth watching and have some standalone value. I absolutely
howled at the spot where Katana – brings out Caden to escape the Piper Niven avalanche, and she lands on Chelsea. Now, I know there were some people complaining it was a convoluted spot, but it worked for me.
Oh, no, it worked, and it was in service of this match where Piper Niven quietly was the weak link here. Chelsea Green almost had the titles won back.
Yeah. Yeah,
like she was the competent one. That was the other thing that I liked about this. And this kind of gets into a bigger, more expansive thought that I have about WWE right now, which is that there's a lot, especially like Raw's a really nice sample of this, a lot more subtle booking and nuanced beats and matches and a lot less straight template in the matches. And it makes the show breathe so much more. Drew McIntyre is a great character.
Drew McIntyre is fantastic. Yeah.
Drew McIntyre is a character that Vince McMahon could never in 1,000 years have come up with. Like this iteration of Drew, with the combination of motivations and things, the confluence of emotions that are running through McIntyre. Interesting, fun, good character. R-Truth and the Judgment Day.
Oh, Jesus.
They have found the right balance with. The Judgment Day is still a legitimate, tough faction that no one thinks is goofy. They are not the Undisputed Kingdom. They are still very much a legitimate faction. And yet you have R-Truth that they're thinking like, and what makes it work in a lot of cases is the way that Damian Priest is basically like, this shit's so stupid, guys. I'm not worried about this. Like,
he amuses me. Let me like, amusing till he's not.
Right. Like it's like you could tell the mightiness of the whale by the size of the
I actually think that support. might set up Damian Priest eventually saving R-Truth from the beating he's going to get. And that might be how they get the face turn in there. Because it feels like Damian's going to turn and then Drew's going to replace him in the Judgment Day. But I've been thinking about, you know, why doesn't Damian Priest and these other guys, they get so mad and they never beat up R-Truth. But it feels like the empathy from Priest is going to be the thing that makes him decide he's going to save R-Truth. But I want to go back to something else you were saying because of the subtlety and stuff. There's a lot of competency in both babyface and heel on this show because you had... Drew has his grudges, but he's consistent in his grudges. He's the bad guy with a point. I'll get to that promo a little later because there was a problem with the promo when CM Punk came out, but overall it was good from Drew's point of view until they started talking about, well, I'll get to it now, until they started talking about office politics And I needed somebody to lead me through this locker room. It's like, why? We hear WWE is the greatest place on earth to work. Why does he, you know, it becomes executive vice presidents arguing about the corner office. I don't like those types of promos. But you had also Balor match where Gargano, after all the chicanery and stuff, also helps Ciampa cheat to win and pull one out. Competent baby faces. You kind of like it. They're getting screwed, so they decide to screw the bad guys. That's cool. The Kaiser-Kofi match, which turned into a weird early 90s chop fest for a few moments that I really dug. But they got
that over-delivered massive. Oh, like that whole segment was awesome.
It was great. And then
it was Kaiser, really good.
It looked like they screwed something up with the steps, and I thought they had messed something up with the steps, and so Kaiser's leaving and whatnot. And you go, okay, they're not doing the step spot. And all of a sudden he runs around to the side where the security isn't, drop kicks Kofi in the head. I was like, okay, they got me on that one. I wasn't sure. Yeah. That was great. Yeah, no, a lot of competency within the characters and the logic stuff. So kudos to the quality control of WWE. I'll get to my other points in a moment. But I want to do one last thing. That R-Truth segment is fantastic comedy. Oh,
so funny.
The baby picture alone. The baby Judgment Day. Effing killed me, man.
Like the sheer defiance of math, a lot of times with R-Truth lines, you just think of the dumbest thing that he could possibly say, and that's what he says. But like, I mean, him saying, "Ever since I was a baby, I wanted to be a member of the Judgment Day," is like it's so deliciously incoherent.
Well, not
it's
just
so...
that there's other denials of reality, like now that JD's no longer part of the Judgment Day.
Judgment Day, right? Yeah, that's right. The other. No, he's right. JD lost the match. He's out. Like,
but he's not. He's still at all the meetings.
No, he lost the match.
And then turning the Judgment Day into your friends is like, hey, if you guys ever need to talk.
Well, that's the other thing.
I
other
want people
thing,
to come up to him and go, hey, you know, R-Truth said misunderstanding, if I need a shoulder.
Yeah, his misunderstanding of like the Judgment Day as people fundamentally is really good. Yes, like thinking that like Judgment Day is a place where like if you want to talk, like if you ever need a shoulder to cry on, if you need a friend. That's what we're here for. Like, we love you. Like,
therapist or something like that.
We don't say it like that, but we love you. Like,
come on by, have some coffee. We'll have a chat. Yeah. Get it all. Like, I'm thinking of who, if Chelsea Green knocks on the door and says, look, I'm really frustrated with my tag partner. You know, I got a lot of issues at home right now. What are you doing? Oh, R-Truth said I could stop by to talk anytime. I thought you guys were down for that. No.
Yeah, I mean.
Your turn, sir. Yeah.
Man, okay. So I guess that basically covers all of Raw. Like Raw was just.
I have one more thing for Raw if you want. Oh, if you want to Raw.
Okay, I mean, like the Ivar versus Otis match was another. Really
That's
funny.
Where I was gonna go, man.
Yeah.
When you have a move. That where Otis afterwards gives a big thumbs up and you've popped Wade Barrett over on commentary because Wade lost his crap on the springboard catch into a body slam by Otis here. And I was just so full of happiness listening to Wade try and compose himself after being absolutely marking for that spot. There's those moments that are legitimate in commentary that make you happy. And that was one of them. Yeah, this is a big dude match, and it looks like Ivar's getting a mini push.
This was the most consistent top to bottom Raw show in a long time. I'm not saying it's the best, but like it started at a level and it just stayed at that level the whole way. Like, you know, if I was gonna get, you know, on a Raw scale out of 10, it's like it started at 7. And it stayed at least a 7 for the entire show.
I was slightly disappointed in the Cody Nakamura street fight. Only because they didn't treat it like a street fight. They treated it like a wrestling match that was no DQ.
Yeah.
And Cody knows better. He needs to bring those knee pads over blue jeans and the weight belt and things that.
That's fair. That's fair. And like it wasn't bad, but you're right. It wasn't.
I like the cartoons for the graphic setup. I don't know if they've been doing that in recent weeks because I haven't been watching that way, but I swear to God, the Cody cartoon looked exactly like Okada too.
It's like, there's a lot of positive developments in the post McMahon era of WWE television. And it seems like one thing we talked about is like, you know, one of our big stories is the end of McMahon and, you know, what does it portend for writing going into 24? And like, I don't know. I'm at least hopeful that this year's going to be a pretty unbalanced, solid year of WWE television. But that, of course, brings us to AEW television. Jeffrey.
I will take a back seat and let you talk for a while.
Let us talk about our friends in the Undisputed Kingdom.
Okay.
Every week, Jeff, we are going to get the same promo from now until the end of this faction. Adam Cole has exactly one promo. There's some degree of colorization to it, but it's always the same tone. Obviously, he has to change the substance. Does he say Samoa Joe? Does he say MJF? Yada, yada. But he's doing the exact same stuff he was doing in the Undisputed Era. And don't let the appeals to homage fool you. This is limitation. This is not, oh, I'm very astutely invoking your favorite NXT faction, the Undisputed Era. No. This is that the well does not have much at the bottom of it. And this time I'm playing with the much thinner deck of...
He doesn't get to levels in the promo at all. It's always the same timbre and the same, you know, range of it. It's never really rage and anger at anybody when he's a heel or any, you know, there's no depth to his heeldom. That's the problem. He's a leader of a faction. He's charismatic and people like him. And it's
well, who's a better tag team, Jeff? Red Dragon or the Kingdom?
Oh, Red Dragon.
Right. Okay. So then the Undisputed Kingdom is just a step down cover band. It's like firing two of the members and replacing them. And you know, like in the band with guys who play similar but less good.
I have gotten into AEW brain a little bit to the point where I have convinced myself that now on week two of hammering home that he's basically bullying Wardlow to forfeiting a title if he wins one. That either Wardlow is going to take out Adam Cole and run this faction, or that he's actually aligned with Joe and he's going to eventually be the guy to help Joe against this faction when they decide to go after him. It's either preposterous that they're doing this or they're stupid. And I can't tell which one it is. And my co-host on the other show, when I pointed this out, goes, well, they're probably stupid. It's like, why are we already teasing one guy in the faction not belonging in the faction?
Yeah, he's already not as engaged with it. It's
he's
already
making
clear.
Faces, and it's like, jeez.
And then we get to the kind of the meat of the show. Most of this show was this annoying four-man match stuff. I find these eight-mans to be bloodless and pointless and like all samey. Like they it's the same match. We start off, everybody, you know, kind of tags in and out, gets a little quick exchange with everybody. Then eventually we get to the clear out spot. Then we get into the everybody hits the high impact move spot. And then we get to the one guy gets isolated and pinned spot. Like every time.
The super indie party match style.
It made this show. The difference between Raw and Dynamite in terms of quality was pretty vast.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, Man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero. You have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing slab packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to. Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? It's a, whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
Why is Roderick Strong having a competitive match against Brian Keith? What is the point of this? To what end?
Why is Brian Keith in a match where there's no bounty involved? He is a bounty hunter.
I also had this question of like, should this not essentially be like, the story here should have been fairly simple, that Keith went to MJF and said, hey, what's it worth to you? And MJF made an offer. But
I am told that it's not actually a character. It's just a label. It's a gimmick and a costume. He is just the bounty hunter, Brian Keith. He is not an actual bounty hunter in AEW or anywhere else. He is just a guy with a nickname. We're in agreement on that.
No. Like, a wrestler can't come out and say that they have a gimmick.
Yes, I agree.
Like, this really bothers me, Jeff.
It bothers me too. I love Brian Keith. I think he should be a bounty hunter.
Becoming too self-aware. Like, it's like this meta thing of like, no. Like, I dress like that, but that's just my thing.
That's
like,
just a cover for me crying inside. No, it's not. You're a bounty hunter. Get your ass out there.
It would be like the members of the varsity club coming out and saying that they hadn't actually been to college, that they're just wearing jackets out of
Iowa. I was just a big fan of Syracuse, says Mike Rotunda.
This jacket just fits well, man.
Oh, jeez. Like,
I hate that. I hate that too. I actively hate that. He should lose, right?
Are you telling me the Guns did not both go to Sam Houston State on a rodeo scholarship?
I would rather commitment to that crap than like them to know that that's not true as characters.
Yeah, like, the character didn't tell me that. Somebody on another show told me that. It's like, oh no, it's just a nickname for Brian Keith. It's like,
but he dresses like it. That's actually a gimmick. And like it should be a character. Like he dresses it both to the ring and then in the match in a cowboy like bounty hunter like outfit. This is stupid.
I want to circle back to the 8-person matches because there was something that, well, there was not only that, but there was something that they needed to do in both those matches, and that is give me an excuse for why Preston Vance is a babyface, even though, you know, LA, because remember, we're wrestling to honor Brody Lee. What was the last thing we saw Preston Vance do when he was a member of the Dark Order? Ripped his mask off and made Negative One cry. We need some sort of storytelling where he goes to Negative One and apologizes and gives him a hug so that we can get emotionally invested in this. We also need an excuse for why Anna Jay, who has been aligned with the JAS this entire time, or the remnants of it, still kind of heelish at times, is now with Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, Thunder Rosa. And just a vignette, something to make her to give an emotional resonance that we need to like this person in this match, because she's going to be the sympathetic one getting the pin. And instead, what we're getting is on commentary, well, you know what? Handpicked by Brody Lee. This is a tell and not show. And I want the show part. And it made no sense in some ways because it made the match. It's like, why would these three people team up with Preston Vance to then go up against the Gates of Agony and Brian Cage? You know, it's lazy is what it is.
Absolutely, Jeff. I think just merely saying that this person's friends with Brody Lee and is, you know, therefore we should, you know, be connected with them, that's not enough. I think what would actually go a long way to connect us, the viewers, to some of these nuanced moves is to show recent cagematch.com ratings to Anna Jay and Preston Vance matches.
Well, I mean, it goes to just general storytelling for me, because you had Hangman Page looking for a fight all last week. I'm looking for a fight, looking for a fight, looking for a fight. Claudio, they play this vignette on Collision where it's like, oh, you wanted a fight? All you had to do was ask. We're going to have a fight on Wednesday at Dynamite. What do? Both guys come out looking with their mean face, grr, and a wrestling match breaks out with a big swing. And so instead of a brawl or something like that, a walk-in brawl or something, we're getting a Claudio wrestling match for the most part with people trying to set up the or with Hangman trying to set up the buckshot. It's like, no, this should be a fight. You both said it was going to be a fight. I want a fight. And they didn't. They just gave me a decent 3-star match, 3.5-star match, maybe. I you know, it's one of those things where you just, I get mad at that stuff, but I've been snarking a lot on this, Chris.
I've got a positive note here.
So did I.
Joe, as champion.
Yes.
Joe as champion is very, very solid. Like, look, if you just tabula rasa this and pretend that you have not been watching this crap for the last year and you just tuned in this week and you saw Joe as your champion, he looks like your effing champion. That new belt looks nice, clean. The black is real clean. Like the appointments and stuff on the black on the belt look good. I thought that his engagement with Swerve and his engagement with Paige was good.
Yes.
I even like him just coming out there going, oh yeah, there's a championship committee. You submit to the championship committee and you'll get your match with me.
No more of your ho-ass comments.
Yeah. No, and the reason that's going to happen is because I'm going to shut you the hell up, and then you're going to go back to the back of the line after you get out of the hospital.
I maintain that Joe is the only AEW champ they've ever had. I also maintain he's also the only world champion in any other company. He is the only world champ, period. That's all I want. I just want a guy who looks good in a suit, and I think he can kick my butt. That's all I want. That's all I want in a world champion. That is literally all I want, is a guy who looks good in a suit, kind of cool, and just kicks ass. And that's all I want.
Company commitment and health concerns always remain the question marks with Samoa Joe. We know this about him. But look, does he have, dare I say it, kind of a Bockwinkle sort of aura of, yeah, like the quality promo, articulate, and like a real aura of in-ring menace
the
about
cool,
him.
The cool, calm mid-80s flair too. I mean,
yeah, but- yeah, and well, I was thinking more of like kind of the Elder Statesman champion, where you still took their matches and like their style. Bockwinkle was such a good wrestler, even in like his like 40s, and like early 50s.
Yeah,
but, yeah, like. His matches still have intrigue, even if they're a little bit slower paced. He's articulate, and most importantly, he feels like the effing champion. And I think that really matters.
The hangman, in between his match and coming out for this promo, looks like he grew 2 weeks worth of beard. But my God, he's looking more and more like Magnum TA every friggin' day.
Also, he looks like he's like the beard frames his face in a way where he looks substantially older.
Like Silas Young almost.
Yeah, it's you know, it's the difference between 30 and 40.
Yes.
On him. Yeah. Yeah. He looks 40 with the beard.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. It's not good for him.
Oh, really? You like the more youthful look, not the grizzled look.
You know, actually, I'll take that back. I think okay, yeah, you're selling me on this. It's kind of like
Like Magnum was like 30 or something like that, but he looked like 30 or he looked like 45 at times.
Five, yeah, he always looked 45. Yeah, yeah, I know. Magnum
Arn Anderson the same. I mean, maybe some age on this guy will make him more of a legit. He could be a cowboy.
I actually, you're talking me into this. Like, he might very well just need the seasoning of age. Like, that actually might hold them in good stead.
Okay, so let me tell you what happened in the main event segment. Because you've stopped watching.
I'm just not going to watch Flair stuff. I have no
I get it. Well, Flair was...
I don't want to watch the energy drink pimp.
Well, no. Flair didn't say anything. He was introduced first, and then Sting and Darby came out.
No, I know, but he's an energy drink pimp now, best.
It's not even a good energy drink, for God's sake. Well,
you know, not everything could be Steven Seagal's lightning bolts, Jeff.
Oh, God, is that a drink?
That was a drink about 20 years ago. It was one of the greatest energy drinks ever made. I believe the other one was called the Asian Experience. There were two flavors called. One was Lightning Bolt, and I believe the second
Moving
one was
on,
called,
here's what happened. Yeah. You had Darby and Sting come out, and then you had a team straight out of 1990 WCW with Konosuke Takeshita and Powerhouse Hobbs. And they had a 1992 Hoss fight or 1990 Hoss fight type of vibe to it, with Takeshita once again throwing Darby all over the place and Sting and Hobbs walking and brawling all over the place in a moment that would have made even you laugh because it was so pathetic. Ric Flair crawls into the ring on his knees on the apron, gets into the ring gingerly, tries to chop Hobbs, and Hobbs just no-sells it twice and then gets an eye poke for his troubles. And then as this walk and brawl continues, you watch Flair gingerly get out of the ropes and get down on his knees and get down on the floor and do nothing for the rest of the match, which is dumb. But then Sting has Hobbs on the rafters and does a scorpion death drop through two tables. Bumps his head, and so they win the match because it's a falls count anywhere match. And so for the final match in Greensboro for Sting, it's going to be Sting and Darby versus the Young Bucks, who come out in the most douchey mustaches ever, pea coats, one white, one navy blue, I think, or whatever, looking... They were cosplaying something. I don't think it was Spy versus Spy, which a lot of people are saying. It was something else from a movie or something like that. But they look like the biggest douchebags on earth. Nothing is said. They just stare at each other. So we're just assuming that they are the opponents for Greensboro, which I think. So that's how Dynamite ended. I think the only match we didn't get to was that Ricky Sammy one, which was just...
You know, like, it's so weird. Like, Starks and Sammy Guevara are like mirror images of each other, where they've been turned so many times, and the crowd feels the same way.
Yeah.
They don't really know if they want to boo Ricky, and they don't really know if they want to cheer Sammy, and it makes the match really heatless.
No, this match was heatless. It was dull, and then it was to set up why is Sammy Guevara shaking hands with Ricky Starks, who has been a heel for 4 or 5 months? I don't care if you put over that they're friends in real life or whatever.
You want to know the way to spin out of the tailspin for both of these guys? Align them together.
And with Big Bill, because I actually
get them all three of them together. Maybe that's the way you clean this crap up.
Have them beat down Jericho to the cheers of many. Although they'll be playing Judas the entire time, so you don't hear any boos.
Yeah, the nerds will still be singing Judas as they're booing him. They're like, boo, Judas!
Judas in my mind, boo! Chris Jericho and Sting are both aping New Jack all the time now. Jericho with the music and Sting from jumping off high things. It was a smart cover, or attempted a cover. They had thought that Jericho was going to get booed, so that's why they played the music the entire time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. I know. Like they're, and heaven forbid Chris Jericho get booed. I mean, this is a wrestling show, Jeffrey.
Well, he's a baby face. We can't boo a baby face.
This is a wrestling show. We don't boo the talents.
We give them love and encouragement and say, both these guys.
Both these guys. Clap, 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 clap. Both these guys.
And this is awesome.
Both these guys. Yeah. Fight forever. I like anything that claps like dog show. Like that. Fight forever. Fight forever.
I'll do one note from Collision. I liked the FTR House of Black match. I just thought the stipulation was stupid. If FTR loses, they have to leave the ones they love and go to the House of Black. So they do this match in Charlotte. Dax's daughter, who is way too smart to be watching this, absolutely no-selling everything, while the wife looks on worried. And then they get the crap beat out of them in their hometown after the match, because they win, but still, the House of Black just takes them out. But I liked the match overall. And are you...
I'll hit a little NXT for you right quick.
Well, I'm going to get into NXT, but I actually like the idea of the golden... the Bullet Club Gold and the Acclaim being a faction, but you know this is just setting up for a turn, right? I kind of want it, though. I kind of want the Acclaim back being heels.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I guess it might lead to the re-feud between the Bullet Club and the Acclaimed again. I don't know.
Do all the guns have to work with each other always, though? I mean, in the ring?
I think they like that.
Okay.
The answer is in a different company, no, but like, I think they like doing that. So I could see that kind of going that way.
All right. We can move to NXT.
Yeah. Okay. Look, Braun Breaker continues to absolutely have friggin' charisma, man. Like, that guy, he's special. He's good. He might be my favorite Steiner ever. I think I moved past how I'm more of a Rick guy than a Scott guy.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm more of a Rick guy than a Scott guy. Breaker, damn it, if he doesn't do ever, he kind of is like both of them, only more athletic.
I wish he had a cousin that was also a Steiner that he could team with.
Oh, so I know, right? Or, I mean, I guess you could just find him a good tag team partner, too. But, like, let them be absolute Wolverines together. But, like, dude, he's great. I'm not saying, like, the Baron Corbin part of this was anything. But, like, it looks like, if anything, Breaker's going to eventually turn on Corbin when they lose this. And we might be turning Breaker back face, which I think is interesting.
I don't know if they turn them. They're kind of doing the same story that Corbin did with Samoa Joe in the first Dusty Classic. The two heels that get together.
Right.
Putting them against Gallus was interesting.
It was.
This was straight out of like Steiners versus Varsity Club or Steiners versus Doom. You know, that early 90s WCW Hoss fight crap that they used to do all the time. I don't mean crap in the bad way. This was crap in a good way.
Mm-hmm. No, this is good.
I need to say how disappointed I was in how bad the comedy of the Tiffany Stratton goes to the farm bit was. And I think the failure of it was that there was absolutely
poop jokes. They could have used some more poop jokes.
There was absolutely no truth in it to anchor it down, you know, to give it some sort of, you know, and then this thing that's bad happens type of thing. I mean, she comes showing up in the Barbie outfit and you're like, no, that's a bad call. And it's nothing but poop jokes and oh, my high heels won't work at the farm. It's like, of course they won't work at the farm, you dope. You know, it was camp on camp on camp, and it never really heightened to the point of being funny camp. And I really, it was no Von Erichs Jimmy Garvin and Precious have to work at the Von Erich farm. It wasn't that at all. It never even got close to that level of funny for me. And I was disappointed.
They dragged. They came in there with one joke. She's going to dress in a pink cowgirl outfit.
She's going to fall in poop. That was the only joke they had.
Not a lick of inspiration.
There was no real begrudging respect moment that ever happened and that could then get ruined by something stupid. Either. I mean, it was just, it was bad.
Yeah, like week one, there should have been like at least a beat where it seems like they almost respect each other.
Yeah.
And like, they didn't even, like, this was it's so funny because it's the same team that brought you that great R2 Truth segment this week, wrote this, and this stunk up the house. I like Josh Briggs.
Yes.
I think Josh Briggs' lariat looks legitimate, and like I think he's just he's a good you know, mid card guy. Like,
I want him and Dijak to be a team. After that Iron Man challenge, they were like the skyscrapers, man. They were great. I love them. That was the best thing I saw. It's like, yes, I want two big tall dudes just destroying geeks. That's all I want out of a tag team sometimes.
And then outside of that, I didn't think that this show had like a whole lot.
Oba Femi is your North American champ. That's way too soon for that belt to be on him.
I saw that and I was like, oh no, they're gonna do it, aren't they? There's one other note I have. Lexus King, it's amazing that they've turned Brian Pillman Jr. into a good promo. Like, he had no charisma back. Remember, like, the BPJ guy on AEW when he was like the Varsity Blondes.
Yeah.
That character sucked. He had no charisma at all. Like, Lexus King is an annoying character, but that's part of the design. And I think Pillman's not bad at being that character.
He's gotten produced really, really well. And you know who, I mean, when you watch him in the ring now, because he's not as cut as he used to be.
I kind of like that aspect of him too. I like the.
You know who he looks like in the ring? If you don't see the face, he looks like Chris Jericho.
A little bit, yeah. He also reminds me a bit of Omega. It's like Omega and Jericho kind of synthesized together, and that's the Lexus King character.
I really liked knowing that. I watching the Chase U vignette with JC Jane and Thea, but one of the extras in there was Matty Renkowski, who had a bunch of we talked about her signing. She was on a lot of AEW Dark and Dark Elevation. She originally had a braid, and then people thought she was glomming off of Bianca. She's pretty good, but yeah, these vignettes. This Chase U story is going nowhere for me.
It's the same thing with the D'Angelos. It's like they had no idea what the hell they were doing when they wrote those story beats. And now they've arrived at week six and they're like, holy crap, we have made the D'Angelos and Chase U very stupid with no clear way of getting them back on track. Like, I mean, I guess you could send Andre Chase to therapy for 2 weeks and he comes back a changed man. Some crap like that. But
I do like the Nathan Frazier Axiom team, though. Too.
I like, no, I, I, those guys have good screen chemistry too. Like they do. Yeah, they do. They work well off of each other. And Frasier's found a good character. Frasier has found this babyface character. I guess I'm very sympathetic to this, where it's like the babyface character who has this tendency to voice his opinion about people too quickly and sometimes too frankly, and it gets him into trouble. I'm very sympathetic to this character. This one hits home. I'm rooting for Nathan. I want him to win the championship this year.
Something random that you like that wasn't modern. Let's do that and get out.
Okay. I mean, this week I've been in terms of retro stuff, just kind of going through old Roddy Piper stuff, and my revisitation of Piper as a promo, this is one that has not gotten better with age. It's like Macho's, I think I like more as I get older. Honestly, there's a compositional quality to all of his that I now appreciate. I think you could really see the difference between Macho's style of promo and Piper's style of promo. Yes, both come in with high energy. Yes, there's probably drugs involved in both. But the difference is that Poffo clearly sat and thought out a large chunk. There's the occasional one that's really winged, but when he'll pick a song or whatever and work an entire promo around a song, and that stuff is great. Now, Piper's promos, on the other hand, are not structured at all. It's just him at 10 kind of flying around, which certainly when he's not wrestling someone who's white becomes extremely problematic in relatively short order. Albeit with this, there's this occasional self-aware thing that he does that I've found very endearing, where he likes to point out how his opponents wear skirts and dresses and stuff. And it's very, very much with this awareness that he's wearing a kilt, he's the one who, but he always likes to project that onto other people.
When you watch Savage, and especially in the ones where he's doing the pre-tapes with Okerlund,
yeah, the beat goes on.
I could see him because now that you know some stories and you know his process, you can kind of see him backstage, taking in the room like Kaiser Soze. All right, what prop am I going to take out there to then bring this thing? The cup of coffee or the newspaper, or he'd always have a prop with him and do that type of thing. And once you understand the process, and then that was what was then fueling him to think of the next thing. It's genius. Piper does this thing that once you hear it, it'll drive you nuts, because he's talking, he's always breathing in. And during that moment, he's breathing in half a second. He's trying to think of the next thing to say, and it's just coming out of his mouth. But it's very coordinated in terms of, every 2 seconds, he's going to breathe through his mouth and chest, and you're going to hear it on the mic. And it gives a certain staccato-ness to the promo, which is interesting. Yeah.
But it also comes at the expense of the content sometimes.
Yes, yes.
He Piper's stuff, again, I'm aware he's on drugs, so if you're revving up to tell me that's the cocaine, Chris, duh. Piper's promos suffer from this thing where he is just chugging way too fast, and so you don't actually get the latent content very well, or he will fumble one line in the middle of the promo, sometimes a structural one, or sometimes right at the end. There's one that he did that, it's a good, it's a pretty good promo. And he's last time I beat you within an inch of your life, and this next time I'm going to take you the whole inch. And that can't possibly be the right way to stick the landing on that one.
I am a fan of Tom Green's Deep Cuts WCW Twitch stream that he does every Tuesday. And this week he had one that reminded me of something I had long forgotten. During the Watts era of WCW, Bill liked giving guys time, and he liked giving guys chances. And he did this thing on WCW Saturday Night called Battle of the Underdogs.
Yeah.
Where he would take two prelim guys and let them have you know, a 5 to 10 minute match to show them what they could do outside of getting killed by a Vader or Barbarian or, you know, the Midnight Express. So, you know, it's like Bob Cook and Jumpin' Joey Maggs, and Joey Maggs would finally get a win or some of the, you know, those types of guys. And I always like, if we actually had actual enhancement talent anymore, that'd be fine. But all of your enhancement talent are your mid card now. And it really kind of makes me miss that third part of the hierarchy in the wrestling.
The established lower tranche.
The guy who's actually also kind of there almost, I mean, he's competent as a wrestler, but he's there kind of to play the role of audience member. If you were brought in to the ring, what would these guys do to you? Like a little pudgy, maybe a little balding, not really all that cut, you know, or, you know, they're young and they're green and they really don't know what they're doing in there, but you know, they may have potential, and they just get absolutely obliterated week after week after week. So that when they get a win or they get an opportunity, it's a big deal if they get a win. I miss that about professional wrestling in general.
Yeah, no, it's a problem that everyone wants to be a mid-card talent, because then eventually what ends up happening is you just end up with no floor or ceiling. Everything's just mid.
Well, this is WWE's fault for the most part, because once they started,
they never believed in establishing anything with those enhancement matches.
Well, they ate those guys alive when they decided they were going to go live on Raw every week or every other week, and that it was what we needed to do was show these guys, you know, main event matches every week from home. So your mid card guys your jobber class went to the mid card guys. So it's guys like Bob Holly, you know, and, you know, Damian Demento probably deserves to get beat and stuff like that. But I mean, he'd be a monster in any other company where, I mean, like 10 years earlier, he'd be the guy killing some dude to get into a feud with Hogan type of a thing. It was just ate wrestling alive. And then WCW basically did that with the Luchadors, you know, okay, the Luchadors, you know, they're going to have this great high-flying match, and then if we ever put them in something of importance, they're going to get killed type of a thing. They never really got a chance to show off how... I mean, they got a chance to show off how great they were with each other, but not dominant.
No. And what's funny is that they, at that time, too, like, if we're talking 96, 97, this is still when WCW Saturday Night was alive and kicking. And so they actually had their established The Gamblers. One of my all-time favorite shows.
I love The Gambler, man.
The Gambler rules. The Gambler's amazing.
Because I also use that for my...
Belt him.
Well, for my short-lived in 92, I used a very similar gimmick when I was trying to get into wrestling. And then I started doing fantasy wrestling. And so that was my gimmick as well. I always liked the Riverboat Gambler gimmick.
There been an extra in a television show who has been more fond of his screen time than The Gambler, who would like come down and clearly drag out the entrance the cards at the camera, like, yeah, over and over and over, and talking a bunch in the ring and getting his promo in. Oh, they're not going to give him a microphone, but it doesn't matter because he's prepared to talk.
He's the Jack Evans of that day.
I love it. No, like, I mean, they did actually have that, like, kind of like arrangement of talents. Kind of maybe the champion of the enhancement talents at that point was Bobby Eaton, who did occasionally have matches against the Luchadors too, which were kind of interesting. Like, he has a match against Mysterio.
Well, all those guys from that tag team era were brought in kind of because there was a period when they were bringing in like Robert Gibson and Ricky Morton and Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton to lose to like the Faces of Fear or to Nash and Hall and stuff. And it was almost like, and also Diamond and Tanaka, but I don't think they teamed. I think they were just kind of prelim guys because
Pat Tanaka was just a singles guy at that point.
Enos and Bloom, but Bischoff was bringing in his old AWA cronies to then lose to this quote unquote new generation, although Barbarian had been around for an eternity, you know, and so had Ming. But nobody ever disliked The Gambler. I don't think I've ever met anybody who disliked The Gambler. Everybody who knows who The Gambler is had fond memories of him for some reason. I was wondering, why wasn't he pushed more? It's amazing to me that that guy has that much appeal given how little he did in wrestling.
He was, he's just, he was charismatic.
Right? Like, charismatic. Yeah, no. Far,
he, like you, you know, we watch a lot of these guys, right? There's something about The Gambler, this skinny, balding man with this confident.
He looked about 42, even though I think he was in his mid 30s,
looks like 42. But just absolutely embodied the gimmick. And had just like, yeah, he had like an aura thing about him. Like I dig that. So WCW did have that stuff. It's just like, I mean, again, I mean, obviously there's like 8 million podcasts about this. I'm not treading any new water. No. When you go back and you look at 96 and 97 and you see all the different levers that Bischoff actually had to pull there, they really had just an unbelievable array of options. In terms of presentation, and like they, you know, for all the hits, they could have gotten even more out of it.
They really should have pushed Zan Panzer. That was the big problem with WCW. But
I liked El Canek. They could have pushed El Canek more, I think. And that
Blitzkrieg is always the proper answer.
Blitzkrieg, yeah, Blitzkrieg not properly pushed.
Let's end it there. This has been Shake the Rousey, and follow me on X/Twitter, Elon Musk's X/Twitter at CrapGame13.
Well, yeah, because, you know, if you get some porn guys, X.com. Yeah, it's a different
That's
thing.
Almost gotten me in trouble at work, by the way.
I bet it has.
Even though I shouldn't even be going to Twitter at work either. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ruffs. You can follow Chris on Instagram at @DOCTOR_NOV. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Podcasts for every kind of niche. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, Good, the Bad, the Hungy, Musica, the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich over there. And of course, the flagship with Joe and Rich. I am a member of Fight Game Media. I do the Dynamite Show live on YouTube starting about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. Myself and Paul Fontaine do a thorough deconstruction. Hey, if you're listening to old podcasts, go back to Monday's podcast on Fightful. I filled in for Denise Salcedo. I am not nearly as good looking, but I have my own strengths. Myself and Sean Ross Sapp had a fun time for about an hour and a half talking Raw on that. Chris has other interests, including pneumonia. He'll tell you about them now.
Yeah, no, I'm into Steven Seagal energy drinks a lot these days. So you can talk to me about Cherry Charge, which is another flavor of theirs. But I was right. Asian Experience is, in fact, a flavor of Steven Seagal energy drink. So you can hear me talk about that and the all-natural Tibetan goji berries and Asian cordyceps. I'm pretty sure that's the virus from The Last of Us, but that's apparently in the energy drink, as well as B vitamins and ginseng and also guaranana.
Get the ghost sour watermelon. It's the best energy drink out there to me.
Is that a Seagal brand?
No, it's not.
Well,
then
I don't give a crap.
What's your favorite Seagal movie?
I think it's on something ground. The one where
he plays Native American.
Yeah, well, because he as he is fond of pointing out, he gives that speech about the environment 12, 13 years before that doofus Al Gore ever did, and why didn't he get the Nobel Peace Prize?
Under Siege 2 is the correct answer. But you want to plug your guitar lessons or no?
Oh, yeah. If you want guitar lessons from me, you can get those by messaging me on Instagram. I am still teaching them. And now more than ever, I am definitely taking them on. So if you want lessons, hit me up on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV.
And if you have a compilation of the best of The Gambler, send it to the Discord. We'll go over it next week.
On deadly ground.
On deadly ground. That's it.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.